And we will continue also engaging with the traditional leaders on issues of concern. We as a department, we also engage with communities on the area that they also highlighted on where there's strife. We continue and try to resolve. And we believe that the bill and the other forms of tools, including the charter, provide us an opportunity to assist us with the challenges that are facing communities and also in terms of investment. Now, in terms of our input, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, we'll request Mr. Mabuza just to take us through, and then we will later on conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, TJ. Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Makosi, Raete, the guests. I will shoot straight into the input of the department and submit that our inputs are really part of the ongoing engagement on this very sensitive and difficult concept that we are dealing with as we are shaping and building this beautiful democratic South Africa. Straight into clause one, section one of the bill relating to the definitions. How to read the presentation, the top bar, not sure what color that is, is intended to summarize the areas that have been brought forth in the submission of the National House of Traditional Leaders. There are four areas of definition that they are dealing with, and we will start with the definition of a community. We understand indeed that when you introduce a definition, you must have a purpose for which you are amending that definition, and perhaps it does not come out clear in what we have proposed as a definition of the community, is that it is linked to, in particular, to the social and labor plan development, so that we can begin to optimize the development impact contribution from the mining industry by better defining, as it were, what is a community. The definition that we propose is very broad and not exclusive of the jurisdictions of traditional leadership. And we specifically look at the definition to the extent that it references to members who exercise interests or rights of a particular area communally in terms of an agreement, custom, or law. We do, however, acknowledge that in the definition our focus was limited to district municipality, and we believe that it can accordingly be extended to include local municipalities, because not all local municipalities are covered by district municipalities. Can also include metropolitan municipalities, and indeed traditional authority can possibly be included in the definition. We are mindful of the inherent complexities in defining a community. I think members of the House will be aware of the various legal processes that are underway in dealing with this very complex and fairly evasive notion of defining a community, and clearly community definition will continue to track the various legal processes to the extent that we can firm up on this process together as we move forward. On the second proposed definition relating to member of the community, we wish to submit that by definition a community is made up of members. And so, and therefore contained in the definition of the community, as it were. On the definition of beneficiation, I think it's important to spend a little bit of time here, that the definition of beneficiation to include various stages to the final stage is a very, it requires a government-wide approach, because when you look at the value chain from exploration to extraction to processing and to various stages, if you take steel for instance, you have more than 10 minerals that go into steel manufacturing, and there are all types of products that can emerge from steel manufacturing. And so the reason this definition needed to be improved is that the manufacturing of cars, for example, as a final product, would be very difficult to administer through the MPRDA. However, we have adopted an industrialization policy as government, and there are various instruments across different departments of government. And what is required is better coordination, improved coordination amongst government departments to ensure that we can achieve the necessary final stage. Indeed, this definition was more narrowed because we have constantly been accused of regulatory uncertainty. And so if you leave things broad and you do not define them for what you are seeking to achieve, it does bring about all sorts of unintended consequences. And to the extent that the transition from minerals to the manufacturing, that maximum point of inflection, as it were, that relates and defines the relationship between the mining and the next phase, is the intention and the basis on which Section 26, as it relates, or the definition of beneficiation, further elaborated in Section 26, is seeking to achieve. Lastly, on the definition, the proposal for deletion of labor sending areas and replacing it with the preferential employment opportunities for proximal communities. I think we needed to take a step back and state that the concept of labor sending areas is not intended to entrench this apartheid system that we know sourced labor en masse in certain areas. But this is a history that we cannot wish away. The effects of that history remain with us today, but before maybe I elaborate, is that the labor sending area definition is intended to deal with this disproportionate impact of mining towards distant communities on whose heart and sweat the industry was built. This definition further elaborates on the object of the Act, which include all the heat not limited to the regulation of mineral as well as upstream petroleum resources for the benefit of all South Africans. I want to emphasize the object it says for the benefit of all South Africans. However, there is a deliberate bias towards mine communities. These mine communities, as well as labor sending areas, which take into account the fact that the terms of the legal provisions in the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act emphasizes and reiterates the notion that these minerals beneath the surface belong to all South Africans irrespective of their location. We also wish to caution on the possible risks of unintended consequences of promoting enclave development with the proposed insertion of preferential employment to proximal communities that may have serious ramifications in the stability of those areas. In relation to Clause 2, Section 2, as it relates to the object of the Act, the National House of Traditional Leaders proposes an insertion of paragraph J to promote and ensure minimum unencumbered net value ownership of the historically disadvantaged South Africans in mining companies of not less than 26%. Firstly, we wish to indicate that the proposal belongs elsewhere other than in the object of the Act. And where it belongs is with transformation, with broadly and ownership in particular, that are expressly dealt with under Section 102A of the MPRDA, which enjoin the Minister with the responsibility of developing the broad-based socio-economic empowerment charter, known as the mining charter, with specific targets. As you may know, the mining charter has been reviewed and aligned with the national transformation legislation, including the BBBEE Act, the DDI Generic Codes, as well as the Employment Equity Act. But also just to emphasize that what has been proposed makes reference to historically disadvantaged South Africans. The alignment processes introduces a shift from the use of HDSA to black people as part of effecting meaningful and consistent transformation across all the economic sectors in the country. This reviewed mining charter has been published in the Government Gazette for comments. It is still available for comments, and we propose that the issues relating to ownership and transformation issues broadly, we deal with them in the mining charter document as gazetted. On Section 47, dealing with suspension and cancellation of rights, the submission being considered today proposes an insertion, paragraph E, in Section 47(1) to expressly incorporate reference to contravention of the mining charter as an offence. As the department, we note and support the submission, as we believe it provides for necessary legal clarity and certainty on what is and isn't an offence relating to a central tenet of transformation that remains valid today and for the foreseeable future in this country. On the issue raised under the order of processing of applications, Section 9, as well as Section 10 of the REMDEC, REMDEC being the Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee, established under Section 10 of the of the Act, as well as objections. Effectively, this is dealing with the establishment of the independent structure that is proposed in the submission being considered today. It is proposed that the application process and objections must be taken over by an independent body called the Minerals and Mining Development Council to eliminate any future conflict of interest. In this regard, the responsibilities of the Minister, Regional Manager, the RAMDEC Committee and the Ministerial Advisory Council must be substituted for this proposed council. Honorable members, if we go back to the promulgation of the MPRDA in 2002, it introduced unprecedented reforms in the mining industry. In our history, you may recall that land ownership meant that you owned the minerals and all the natural resources below the surface. And what this Act did when it was promulgated, it separated land ownership from mineral and petroleum resources and transferred the ownership of mineral and petroleum resources as national heritage, which national heritage was vested under the custodianship of the state. The Constitution, our supreme law, provides for mining as national competence. And so, Section 3 of the MPRDA enunciates this constitutional prerogative by enjoining the National Minister of Mineral Resources to act on behalf of the state to address the development of mineral and upstream petroleum resources. On Section 11, as it relates to transfer of rights, it is duly submitted that Section 11(3) must be deleted as it defeats the purpose of black economic empowerment, and that this clause allows transactions which were owned through the EE to be sold back to white companies without consent. It is also submitted that there must be a register on current status of all BEE deals to ensure that the minister has knowledge where there is alienation back to white hands. We wish to state that the subsection being referenced is not applicable to any transfer of rights. And so it does not provide that banks can transfer the rights as they wish without the consent of the minister, as it were. But it is restricted to a well-developed system of mortgaging for financing purposes. This section further states that if a bank, a public entity, or a financial institution in question undertakes in writing that any sale in execution or any other disposal pursuant to foreclosure of the mortgage will be subject to the consent in terms of Section 1, subsection 1 of Section 11. And so we respectfully submit that Section 11, subsection 3, ought not to be read in isolation, but should be read with the rest of Section 11 in its entirety. Subsection 4 makes it mandatory for any transfer, cession, etc., to be registered with the Mining Titles Registration Office. And so this provides the minister with all the necessary records of all transactions that will be transferred and registered in terms of the Mining Titles Registration Office. on Section 5A as it relates to prohibition relating to an illegal act. It is submitted that the section prohibits prospecting mining without within a 21-day written notice to landowners and lawful occupiers. It is proposed that the time is too short and that the notice period be increased to 30 days. Landowners and lawful occupiers must be consulted first before any activity on the land. This duty to consult is enshrined in Section 10 as well as the granting clauses of the bill consistent with the Mengwenyama Constitutional Court judgment, as it were. The proposal to increase the notice period is duly acknowledged and supported to the extent that it can improve accessibility and consultation phase by a further 9 days. Further on consultation, and what we have done here, Honourable Members, was to group all the submissions relating to consultations, and that is Sections 10, 16, 22, and 27, which are contained in Clauses 6, 11, 17, and 22 of the Bill. And what is common in all of the submission is that the sections dealing with consultation be expanded to include express reference to the community if the application relates to land occupied by a community. The bill provides that applicants must consult interested and affected parties, landowners and lawful occupiers of land. The latter category includes a community as defined earlier, which community could potentially be expanded to include local municipalities, metropolitan municipalities and traditional authority, as it were. This section was amended to delete interested party to ensure that the applicant can give necessary and due attention to the parties who are directly affected. Having said, express reference to community in the provision is noted and accordingly supported. On the granting and duration of the prospecting right, that is Section 17.4A, Clause 12 of the Bill, the clause empowers the Minister to impose conditions to promote the rights and interests of communities, including conditions requiring community participation in respect of rights on land owned by the community. The proposal is supported, but it must be mandatory, not optional, for the Minister to impose these conditions. And so it is accordingly submitted that may might be replaced with must. Honorable members, at this stage we wish to ask you to take a step back and look at the value chain in its entirety of mining, from greenfields to prospecting flash exploration to when a discovery is made, and perhaps we can stop there. At the greenfields and prospecting phase, this phase is an exclusively cost-based activity. There is no revenue generated at this phase of prospecting. And there are limited success rates of transitioning from exploration to mining. In matured jurisdictions, in terms of the availability of geological information and so on to support exploration, the average success rates is between 10 and 20%. So while this is considered, please think about the possibilities of perhaps confusion, possible misleading and unrealistic expectations that we can create in communities when this is expressly indicated as it is suggested in the submission. It is for this reason that the empowerment of communities is generally deferred to a later stage at the discovery point as you move down the value chain. Because once a discovery is made and there is development, then you are assured of extraction, trading, and revenue generation, and so empowerment can generally come naturally. The same is proposed for a mining right, and here the proposal is noted and accordingly supported. Under section 28, which reflects as clause 23 in the bill, the submission being considered advances the mining and rural development requirements, and that there should be a specific target to be communicated to, as the bulk of South Africans live in rural areas and should enjoy the benefits of rural projects. It is our submission that empowerment of communities